This is MSO NewsSports.com.
And this is North Shore Sports Night. Hello there, I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. And welcome to this Monday night program that we've been doing for a long time now. A very, very long time. Tim can't make it tonight. We hope to talk with Tim later on. But we do have a lot of people lined up for tonight's program. And we have some scores that are beginning to roll in. We'll pass along as we go along. We'll have a soccer report, too, from St. Mary's boys soccer, as Coach Mike D'Agostino will be telling us what happened this afternoon against Archbishop Williams. And so, again, you know, we appreciate our sponsors helping us out here, and your patronizing our sponsors every chance you get, if you don't mind. Our advertisers keeps us in business here. As we said, we've been doing this. Whoops, just dropped the microphone. Been doing this for a long time, and we're just rolling right along. So let people know about the program. It's on MSO News Sports. It's our Monday night program. Basically, right now, of course, we talk a lot of football during this time of year, but we also check out the other sports. And when we can't get them into this program, of course, Bill and I will be covering as we go along, putting as much stuff up on the website as we can. And it would behoove you to take a look at the rest of the site as well, because we get a lot of stuff up there on a daily basis. This evening, today, right now, we plan to be talking with the Danvers High School football coach, Ryan Nolan, as he and his team will be heading over to Piper Field on Friday night to take on Marblehead Magicians. That will be for first place in the NEC. What bozo tier is it? Let me see here now. It is Tier 1. That will be for first place in Tier 1, as each team is 3-0 in the conference. Marblehead 6-0 overall. Danvers 5-1 overall. Also be checking in with Hamilton Wenham football coach Jim Pugh. And he also will be involved in a title game in the Baker division of the Cape Ann League, when Hamilton Wenham will be playing Ipswich this weekend. And we hope to have coverage for both of those games, not necessarily play-by-play. The Hamilton Wenham at Linfield game is at 7 o'clock on Friday night. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do that one. We will not be able to do Danvers at Marblehead. We originally had planned to give it a shot, but I don't think it's going to happen. However, we will have either me or Marty Smith will be over at Piper, and we'll be calling in reports to the games that we have on channels A and B and video. And again, that's TBD. We still haven't quite determined as to what games we will be broadcasting, but we should have that up there sometime tomorrow on the website. Also check in with Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. It pretty much is the end of the golf season locally in terms of competition and tournaments and things like that, but Gary will have lots of information for us, as he always does. And we hope to check in with Ipswich High School football coach Kevin Fassett. They took it on the chin, Ipswich did, to a very powerful Linfield team, but a lot of good things going on for the Ipswich Tigers, and we hope to talk to Coach Fassett about that. And again, we'll check in on Mike D'Agostino. Mike has a report on the St. Mary's boys soccer action today. They did beat Archbishop Williams, so he'll have a game report on that. And Nick Kukru will be a phone guest as well. Nick covering Gloucester High School girls field hockey tonight. The girls are at 8-0-3 going into tonight's game, and Nick is at that game covering it as I speak. All of that coming up. And please, you know, tell people about MSO News Sports. Let people know about our programming. It's high school. We cover a lot of sports, of course, and news in the area as well. But high school sports is our main focus. High school sports are our main focuses. Anyway, you know what I'm trying to say. So we hope that you will send along compliments, comments, suggestions, complaints to msonewsports@gmail.com. And, of course, we are on Twitter as well and Facebook. Bill's got to tell you all about that stuff. I don't know. I do what I can. You should have seen Marty and me at the Beverly game on Saturday. Oh, my heavens. Saw some good games this weekend. On Friday night, we saw Marblehead beat Gloucester in a very competitive game. It was kind of a wild game. Coach Rudloff not entirely happy with his boys. Coach Zerilli okay with the way Gloucester played. And Marblehead coming away with that win 21-12. Hamilton Wenham getting by Manchester Essex. We'll talk about that one in a bit. And also on Saturday, we saw an incredible game. It was Danvers 24, Beverly 21 at Hurd Stadium. And as I said, we'll be talking, hopefully talking with Coach Coach Nolan in just a minute about that game. Okay, so that's the lineup as we have it. Hope that you will be with us for the next hour or so. I'd like to say to hi to Coach Ben Goodhue and his dad, sitting with Ben in the stands at Marblehead, just like the Army-Navy game. They were one side, one half, they were on one side of the stadium, and the other half they went over the other side. Real sportsmen. All right, we'll be right back.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we have Danvers football coach Ryan Nolan on the line right now. And, Ryan, you guys are always so busy, always doing something. But thanks for taking the time. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I got to tell you, Coach, an amazing, a real fun game for the fans to watch on Saturday. I'm sure it gave the coaches on both sides a few palpitations. And also, I want to congratulate you and your kids on the interviews afterwards, talking with those two young men, humble young men, appreciating the opposition, but also confident in what they do. So great job both for you as coaches and the high school as well. And let's not forget the parents. It's great to watch these guys.
Well, you know, we're really fortunate, Dan, because we got fantastic school facilities, but, I mean, it's really the people. And we've, the last couple of years, just had outstanding parents, kids. We got tough, smart kids, people who work hard for what they have. And, you know, you can see that when you watch them go out and play and compete and never give up and, you know, play with character and pride.
Well, you know, really, you nailed it, because 2 weeks in a row, I mean, you had a close game against Classical, came up a little short, and it looked as though that were going to happen again against Beverly, but the kids dug deep, and it was a wild game. You know, from a coach's perspective, Coach, do you get a chance to maybe reflect on that and appreciate what a good high school football game that was?
In the moment, there's so many things going on. You're trying to do everything you possibly can to use all the game prep and all the teaching and make sure you don't miss anything. You get so caught up. But I think you're right. You know, you step away from it and you jump in your car and you're driving home and you say, wow, you know, those high school kids went out there, you know, whether seniors, younger kids, gave everything they possibly had. And I think that's why there's such a relationship between a high school coach and players even after they graduate, because you see them develop and you see how they work and you can see they do, you know, just special things when times are the toughest, and I have the utmost respect for our kids.
Well, I got to tell you, Coach Morenci on the other side and his team, I don't want to say they were crushed, but, man, they were disappointed because they've come so close, and, you know, they've been snake-bitten, and it was a weird game. What did you see in the film on your side, on a positive side, Coach, over the weekend that maybe you didn't see at the game?
You know, when we look at it, we're always trying to hold the kids to the highest standard. And, you know, we try to say we'll push them to be better than they can be. So we'll look at it pretty critically. But the one thing we saw that we've seen in every game is that our kids never gave up effort, toughness shown on every single snap. There wasn't a lot of kids. Nobody ever took a play off, and that was the best thing we saw. We also had some young guys. I think Robbie Murphy, one of our linemen as a junior, had to step in, was a little nervous, went out and played as hard as he possibly could. Now, nobody was perfect in that game, but he went out and, you know, it was the first time he got over being nervous, and a bunch of kids were like this who were new players and just went out and played as hard as they possibly could, and they were happy with, you know, taking whatever the result was because they gave their best.
You know, Coach,
it was good to see some kids.
Absolutely, and you know, when you say nobody's perfect, I mean, you can remember the days playing when you might be critiqued or graded as not having a good game, but you know the guy across the line of scrimmage has something to do with that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and you play, like we tell the kids all the time, hey, that other kid's getting a varsity letter as well. So, you know, sometimes both sides are going to make some plays, and what really it comes down to is over the course of that long game, who can make more across the board, 11 guys on each side. And then your special kids, you ask them to go out and make a couple plays, and we were real fortunate that McCarthy did an unbelievable job as a running back, making something out of nothing on a couple of plays. And Zach Dillon, again, was just an outstanding leader for us. And for him to go and make that kick when it counted was unbelievable. So, you know, with a bunch of kids trying hard, putting in a great effort, we had a couple kids that stood out as leaders and, you know, made the difference in that game. So we're happy they stepped up and we got the result that, you know, we're very happy with and feel very fortunate.
Mention the field goal kicking unit again, if you would, please, Coach. You talked about it after the game. Tell me those three kids again.
Sure. It's two of our captains are a part of it. Justin Mullaney is our holder. Obviously, Zach Dillon is a kicker. And Brendan Tracy, our JV quarterback, he plays some safety for us and some special teams in varsity. He's our long snapper, and all of them have done a very good job. And I think I can't name everyone on the protection team, but that's one area we've really improved throughout the course of the year with our protection. We always knew we had someone who could kick, hold, and snap, but those guys are doing a good job protecting.
It's funny how important special teams are, even in high school with field position and so on. And I think a lot of people tend to skip over that, but it is so important. Coach, final reflection on the Beverly game. Tell me a little bit about McCarthy, because when I met him after the game, he looked like a little piece of spaghetti, but man, he didn't run like that.
He's a good athlete. He's a fast kid, and he's a tough kid. He's really worked hard. He had an ankle injury from his lacrosse season. He's a good lacrosse player at the school as well, so it was tough for him getting ready for the season, the summer 7-on-7s in weight room. He was hampered by that, but he kept working through it. And, you know, he's a good athlete, smart kid, he's a tough kid, and he's a junior, so he'll be back next year. And he does a good job on defense for us as well, safety and corner, and anything we ask him to do.
Yeah, absolutely. He had a tremendous game both ways. Okay, what about Marblehead? Were you over there Friday night?
Oh, yeah, yep. Marblehead is Marblehead. They're really well coached. They've got tough kids. They're not going to make many mistakes at all, if any. They're going to try to put you in situations that force you to make mistakes. They're going to go and try to exploit your weaknesses, and they're going to play to their strengths. And, you know, there's a reason why they've been so dominant, you know, for a little while now. So we look at them as an unbelievable challenge, and, you know, our kids are really excited. And, you know, it's great, the alumni support, all the kids that have played them that I've coached the last 4 years, probably, you know, 10, 15 text messages about great job and beat Marblehead. You know, I think team, great rival, but I think the kids have a lot of respect for them and how they run their program and how the kids play.
I'm always
amazed. They're tough kids.
I'm always amazed by their special teams. And as you saw, Andy Clough in the first quarter, I think it was, he whipped off a 75-yard punt besides running and throwing.
Oh, you know, he's something special. I mean, he's 6'7", 240-pound high school player who gets the ball in the backfield, who's smart, can throw the ball, and can run downhill. So we definitely have our work cut out. And, you know, he's not the only one for them. Marino's a great player. Their linebacker, Gillis, is outstanding, and he's back from his illness and playing well. And their program, will kids step up. When they get an opportunity, they step up. They're a championship-level program. So we know we have to be ready, and we're really excited about preparing for it.
Absolutely. This is a championship game coming up this week. And finally, Coach, how's the overall health of your team?
We're really fortunate. I think we're going to have everyone back who was injured this previous game. So we look to be at full strength, and it was good. We had people out, you know, even Taj, who really wanted to go versus Beverly, and it was an emotional time for him. He was disappointed he couldn't play. He was out today, you know, running on the field. The ankle feels good, and we're really excited with him and the other kids coming back. That's really going to be a big shot in the arm for us.
Well, the eyes of the North Shore are going to be on Piper Field on Friday night. So, Coach, hey, Ryan, thanks for taking the time, and we'll see you over there on Friday night.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Coach. Take care. That is Danvers High School football coach Ryan Nolan, and they will be facing Jim Rudloff and the Marblehead Magicians at Piper on Friday night. Marblehead 6-0. They've scored 134, allowed 34. Danvers 5-1 overall, scored 157 and given up 57. Two similar teams, two similar records, and they're both 3-0 in the Northeastern Conference Tier 1, it's called. So that'll be on Friday night. We'll have somebody there covering it if we're not going to be broadcasting it. So appreciate that. Next up, we'll be talking with Hamilton Wenham football coach Jim Pugh in just a minute or two. So stay with us. This is North Shore Sports Night.
Ever wish that help with your business was as nearby as your next door neighbor? At Cape Ann Savings Bank, we're the folks who have helped our neighbors build prosperous communities since 1846. And we invite you to give us a call, discuss your vision, and learn how we can help you grow your business. We're here for you. You have questions. We have answers. Just give us a call, 888-283-CASB, or visit capeannsavingsbank.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, I'm in Byfield, so I hope I don't lose you.
Okay, Coach Jim Pugh is on the line, and he is traveling up north. There are some cell towers around up there, so hopefully we'll keep the signal. Jim, congratulations. You know, the wheel keeps on turning. Obviously, Manchester Essex gave you guys all they could, and you were able to pull it out. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, yeah, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, and they were good. They were very good, and you know, fortunately for us, we were able to make a stand at the end, and then Billy Whalen and our offense, you know, his offensive line and the receivers, we marched 95 yards in less than 2 minutes to win the game. He completed a pass to Michael Crowley with 11 seconds to go.
Wow.
So it was very exciting. We kept everyone in their seats. But, you know, you got to tip your hat to Coach Hutton and his team. You know, I know Hamilton, we don't have a ton of players either, but they really, you know, their numbers are low. So their kids are, you know, they have a lot of kids that are going both ways. But, you know, and I've been saying all week is, you know, the Athanas kid and the Sylvanian kid, they got some players.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know they've given everyone, you know, a tough run, and they moved the ball down the field, and it was a good thing that we had five timeouts. I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so it was a great win, and kept us in, you know, contention for the Cape Ann League small title, Cape Ann Baker, and so that's what we're focused on now is playing against. Linfield.
Well,
and it's not a title game because, you know, we still have Ipswich on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, it has, you know, it's a big game.
That's
and they're 6-0 and we're 6-0. So,
you know,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it's first of all, you know, sometimes when you beat a school, you know, you're supposed to. But Manchester Essex, I think you pointed out, they're not doormats. They're a real good team, and they're a solid team, so it's a big win. But then you turn your attention to Linfield, and it's the other end of the spectrum in terms of participants. They always seem to have a lot of participants. And what I want to ask you about, Jim, is that you've known the Cape Ann League. You know, you're very familiar with it. And how do you rate this Linfield team?
Well, you know, after 2007, I think, or maybe before that, we broke into the small and large. So I didn't see a lot of the smaller schools. However, we did scrimmage Linfield when I was, you know, still coaching at Masconomet, and you know, Coach Weidman has it going there. They got a lot of good teams. I think they've won the Cape Ann Small 5 years in a row. I don't think they've lost to anyone in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we're going to, you know, one of the better teams, you know, not only in the Cape Ann League, but on the North Shore and in our division. You know, they were down the Super Bowl like a couple of years ago.
They're in the mix every year with the playoffs. They're a strong, strong team. And, yeah, that's going to be a tough one. But, you know, you can't ask for anything better. It's week seven. We're 6-0. They're 6-0. Friday Night Lights. And a lot at stake.
Sounds good.
Not just in the Cape Band League, but also playoff ramifications.
Absolutely. Sounds great, Coach. And, you know, well along into the season, I just have to, final question, I want to ask you about your defense because you're giving up the fewest points in the Cape Band League. So we know about your offense when it's working on all cylinders. Tell me about your defense.
Well, you know, our defense is led by Phil Durgan, one of our captains and the heart and soul of our team. And he's been a, you know, three-year starter at middle linebacker. He studies tape. I mean, he does a great job. But Coach Coolis, Coach Melance, and Coach Peach have our defense fired up. And week in and week out, I think one of the things I've been consistently saying is I've been impressed with how physical we've become as a defensive team. Three or four guys on the ball carrier. And that's been a surprise and something that, you know, we didn't see out of our defense last year. You know, we knew we had some good defensive players, but this year it's the physicality that we've been impressed with.
Excellent.
So if we can bring that to the table, you know, we'll be a tough team to beat as we move along.
Okay, finally, Jim, the games that we've done on Friday nights, we've done a couple of at Marblehead and some others, but the crowds have been tremendous. It's almost been like Thanksgiving. How's the turnout been for the games you've been at?
Well, the Friday night game, we've played a couple of Friday night games, but we, you know, we've been playing. We're still no light, so we're playing Saturday afternoon, and you know, some people like it. You don't get as big a crowd because you don't get the middle school kids coming to the game that you get on Friday night.
Right.
So that's what, you know, ups the ante. You get some, but anyway, no, the excitement. And I know that I'm a proponent of the playoff system, and I have been for years and was involved with the developing it. But I think it just adds to the excitement of, you know, watching, seeing who's winning, who's playing who, going to games. So I think it's been great for high school football. I think you guys and the local newspapers, everyone, you know, promoting the sport, it's just awesome. It's been a great fall, and hope for, you know, to continue right through Thanksgiving and beyond.
All right, we'll have somebody in Linfield on Friday night. Should be a great game. Coach, thank you. Drive careful, and we'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Jim. That is Hamilton Wenham football coach Jim Pugh on his way home from practice. We caught him on the road and appreciate it. God, what a master, and it's just amazing. All the good stuff that he's done over the years, and never, ever, ever, ever have I heard him say a bad word. So that's about anybody. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, the big game on Friday night in the Cape Ann League will be Hamilton Wenham at Linfield, and that is a 7 o'clock start. And I did speak a little bit erroneously. It's not really a championship game because Hamilton Wenham will have that remaining league game, the Baker Conference game with Ipswich on Thanksgiving. So there you go. Okay. Still to come, we're going to talk with Gary Larrabee. Haven't checked in with Gary in a while. Looking forward to seeing what he has to talk about with golf. Let me just run the scores that I have once again. Hamilton won 3, North Reading nothing in volleyball. And Ipswich won today over Newburyport, 25-16, 25-14, 25-12. Reading from the coach's report, let me see here. It says, tonight's win put Ipswich in the playoffs with a 9-6 record, exclamation point. Haley O'Connor, Talia Kaplanian, Claudia Bauman, and Lily Sheridan had multiple aces and served consistently with power and accuracy. Ava Warren and Ava Huntley played a strong all-around game. Teamwork and intensity was strong by all, and the team is very excited for the remaining games to push hard for wins to earn a good playoff seed. So congratulations to Ipswich in volleyball tonight, and they were 3-0. I don't know how you say it in volleyball, but Ipswich 3 and Newburyport 0 as the Tigers have qualified for the state tournament. And the other score that we have, Mike DiAgostino will have his report coming up in a minute, reports that St. Mary's beat Archbishop Williams today in soccer to maintain a perfect record. So we'll have that report coming up after our break. You're listening to MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. Producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. We'll talk to Tim Kearns a little bit later, I think.
Fact is, including the commute, people spend 10 hours a day at work. No wonder they're forced to buy car insurance in 15 minutes. They just don't have time to go meet with someone. Well, Columbia Insurance has an alternative. The insurance professionals at Columbia Insurance Agency will meet with you at your workplace. Even better, we'll go to the registry and bring your plates back to you at work, free of charge. At Columbia Insurance Agency, we come to you, and we really do. Visit ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net and set up an appointment today. That's ColumbiaInsuranceAgency.net.
Compelling exhibits, thought-provoking programs, all celebrating Lynn's past while promoting a vision for its future. I'm Drew Russo, Executive Director of the Lynn Museum and Lynn Arts, and I invite you to visit our campus located in the heart of the downtown Lynn Cultural District with galleries at 590 Washington Street and 25 Exchange Street. Currently, we are featuring the Vision Place of Souls, Civil War landscapes by local artist Jeff Fioravanti through December 22nd at the museum, and rotating shows from local artists in the Lynn Arts Gallery. We're open Tuesdays to Fridays 10 to 4 and Saturdays 9 to 1. Visit us online at lynnmuseum.org.
The Porthole Restaurant is a North Shore dining tradition. Enjoy waterfront dining in a casual atmosphere. The Porthole features outstanding quality, quantity, and price. Known for a full variety of menu selections, you must try the award-winning clam chowder, fresh off the boat seafood, lobsters, prime rib, steaks and chops, daily luncheon and dinner specials. They feature spacious and well-appointed function rooms. The Porthole, a great value, a great dining experience. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week on the water on the Linnway in Lynn. The following is a paid political announcement from Lynn City Councilor-at-Large, Brian LaPierre.
Since I have been elected, we have made progress. The city is growing, but there is much work to still do. Small businesses are flourishing, we've created local jobs, and continue to fight for working families all across Lynn. I have responded personally to over 1,000 constituent requests, but the work doesn't stop there. We need to keep our streets safer and our neighborhoods cleaner. We have to maintain our public services while keeping taxes affordable. The people of Lynn deserve a high level of representation. I am Brian LaPierre, and I'm running for re-election for Lynn City Councilor at Large, and I respectfully ask for one of your four votes on Tuesday, November 7th.
This is Coach Mike D'Agostino of St. Mary's Boys Soccer. Fulton School of St. Mary's beat Archbishop Williams 3 this afternoon. St. Mary's is 13-0. They're 9-0 in the Catholic Central League. The first goal was scored by Alou George, assisted by Chris Garcia. The second goal was scored by Chris Garcia, assisted by Thiago de Oliveira. The third goal was scored by Thiago de Oliveira, assisted by native Matt Carmen. And the fourth and final goal game went was a header by Nolan Frez, assisted by Thiago de Oliveira. St. Mary's is looking to play Connor Spellman to wrap up the league
Wednesday afternoon. Thank you. This is MSO
NewsSports.com. All right, we are back. Mike D'Agostino, the score is 4-3. The four got jumbled out there. So St. Mary's Boys Soccer remains unbeaten. They beat Archbishop Williams by a score of 4-3. Joining us out now is sports historian and golf writer Gary Larrabee. I know he's excited about the new Celtic season about to kick off, but it's the waning of the golf season that we're here to talk about. How you doing, Gary?
I'm doing great, Rick. I'll tell you, talking about St. Mary's of Lynn Sports, well, they've had just a remarkable success for their athletic programs over the last, 10, 15, 20 years, and just keep it going.
It's amazing. It is amazing, and it's in they're not a great big school, but man, they just win at everything, boys and girls. And the other thing, you know, I was just talking to the Danvers football coach, Gary, and just talking about the quality of athlete. You know, you read a lot of negative stuff on Facebook and social media and all this other stuff, but you know, when you meet these kids, these athletes, and especially the captains and the leaders and so on, we're in good hands. These kids are good.
So many of them are the complete package, as citizens, as students, as athletes, and as people who want to contribute to their communities now and in the future. And I think athletics breeds those types of young men and young women these days, and the perfect examples of those two, even though we have a lot to say for public schools and public school athletic systems, I'll tell you right now, there's nothing like St. Mary's in Lynn and St. John's Prep in Davis, but giving us those kinds of young people.
Absolutely. And through the Moynihan Lumber student-athlete program, we get to talk to these kids all over, both public and private, and it just reinforced absolutely what you said. But now turning to golf, Gary, I was with Paul Ingram the other day, and Paul said he played a round of golf with Josh Sala, and he said, man, is he good.
He is good, and that's a perfect example of how hard it is to succeed and make it at a professional playing level.
Yep.
Whether you're playing over here, whether you're playing the mini tours, which are almost full-time year-round in Florida, or trying to succeed on one of the Asian circuits like Josh is over there, and based in the Philippines, I believe, and all over here, I mean, and you know, we're still seeing it in all the tours. It is just so hard, and there's so many players who are trying to make it, like Josh, like Jack Whalen from Topsfield, and a few others out there, but it is so hard. It is just so hard.
Well, you know, it's funny, Gary. I believe, if I have it right, Paul was saying that Josh was just here for a short time, so he went over to play one round at Bass Rocks, and I believe he set the course record. I want to say Paul said he shot a 61.
Wouldn't be surprised, and because no one knows that course probably better than Josh, and hopefully it's a sign that he's still got some future as in the game as a player. But it's a tough,
yeah,
tough gig, and it's a tough road to hoe, and we always wish Josh the best.
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about, how difficult it is. So where are we, Gary? Pro, locally, regionally? What's going on?
Well, you know, the LPGA Tour is wrapping up. They just had a tournament over in South Korea, and to know the real problem with the LPGA Tour, all you got to do is see the top three finishes in this tournament yesterday: Jin Young Ko, Sung Hin Park, and In Ji Chun. And some of those are Chinese, some of those are Korean. Mm-hmm. But it's an ongoing concern on the LPGA Tour. But they're going where the money is. They're going where the sponsorships are. That's why like almost half their tournaments are outside the U.S., but they get some tournaments for the young ladies to play, and they're wrapping up this season, and we will look forward to seeing what happens in 2018. Ditto goes for the PGA Tour. The Champions Tour is still thriving. We had a great stop with the U.S. Senior Open the end of June, and Colin Montgomery, won the tournament this weekend down in North Carolina. They begin the Champions Tour and the Charles Schwab Cup tournament. I think there's three more tournaments for the boys who are over 50. Lots of money to be won there, and we don't think we have anyone locally who'll be playing in those playoffs the next 3 weeks. But that short tour is obviously winding down, and of course the PGA Tour, of which Rob Oppenheim is now a member for the second time in 3 years. Got going this weekend, the second week of the so-called new tour season, the end of 17 and most of 18, 2018. Pat Perez, a rather controversial fellow out there on the tour, he won a $1.2 million, so you can see. And Keegan Bradley,
mm-hmm,
from Hopkinton, from Vermont, he finished second, which is good for him. He made $756,000, which is the only reminder we need as to why people like Josh Schaller and Jack Willen and others are still trying to shoot for that golden globe somewhere where they can make a lot of money.
Yeah, my goodness gracious. I don't know. I can't even fathom that. But the thing that Paul was mentioning and you are emphasizing is that those athletes who make it to that level across the board, I think, in all sports, are just so much better than the rest of the world that it's incredible. And then the competition among them is amazing. And I think if we look back on the summer, Gary, that's the key word. It's the competition. I mean, everybody, there was a different winner almost every week.
And it's, it's even tough, when we play the New England Open, the New England PGA Club Pros, or the Mass Open. You see it at that level as well. One other thing to make note of is the fact that Peter Uihlein, from down New Bedford way, He had a pretty good year. He tried. He played over in Malaysia and shot 275, which is 13 under, which is finished, I guess, top 10. I will be seeing him on the regular tour next year because his father from Haverhill, Wally Uline, just retired as the CEO and chairman of Acushnet, which is the parent company for FootJoy, Titleist Golf, Titleist Equipment. So that's a bit of a milestone moment, talking about Peter and his dad. That'll be a chain. Of course, we've got, you know, Jay Monahan from Winchester running the PGA Tour these days. So lots of local connections as we look ahead to a new season in 2018.
Amazing, amazing. All right, so you still have the columns going in the Salem News?
We wrapped them up, Rick, but... yes, we have a couple of news items, if I might share those with you very briefly here.
Well, please do.
They still have a week of a competition on the New England PGA Pro-Am circuit down the Cape this week, and Kernowitz Frank Dully won the event today down at Oyster Harbor, shooting a 1-under-71. Congratulations to Frank. He'll be down there playing all week. Well, the main in the world looks pretty good, as you know, for the rest of the week around here, too. We should also make note that Tennisville Country Club over in Marblehead Swampscott, they've been implementing the next stage of their long-range planning strategy, and they're rebuilding every bunker. They're moving some and adding some other bunkers, taking some out. They're expanding 11 greens. They're installing new drainage on 10 greens, something that Salem Country Club did a couple of years ago when they put their original greens back in shape for the Senior Open and for the members, and lots going on at Tedesco there with their wonderful golf course. We should also make note that John Theo from Danvers is making it 50 years as a PGA professional on December 16th. Congratulate John. And we should also make note that the longtime Kernwood head pro back in the 80s, the end of the 60s, all of the 70s, and the beginning of the 80s, Cotton Dunn passed away at 79 last week. So lots of things. And we got a big party coming up, Rick, you may or may not know. Paul Barkhouse, one of North Shore's favorites over the last 50-plus years from Wynn, served as a pro at Ferncroft for 12 years, and always a favorite amongst all of our North Shore folks from Cape Ann to Lynn, to where else. We're going to have a big retirement party for Paul on November 17th at Woburn Country Club. If anybody who's listening would like to be a part of that night, just get a hold of me at Gary@GaryLarrabee.com.
Sounds awesome. Sounds awesome. So, so much still going on. We're going to keep it going, Gary. I want to keep it going as long as you want to. So we'll talk next week.
I always get time to talk golf with you, Mr.
Yes,
You know that.
I thought so, and we can always, director. I'm a little excited about the Celtics myself, so we can always chime in with something else, too.
I am, too. Looking forward to tomorrow night, a little party here at our house.
Good.
Welcome the season. Hopefully they will meet or exceed expectations.
I love it. I love it. All right, Gary, we'll talk next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Take care, Gary. That is Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and a sports writer in general who knows a lot about a lot. And certainly knows a whole bunch about golf. We appreciate it. So still to come, we're going to try to check in with the Ipswich football coach here in just a second. We'll talk with Nick Kukru, I hope, and maybe even squeeze Tim Kearns in there. We'll be right back.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodright Replacement Windows. Why Anderson? With low-E glass, low-maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSO NewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders. Mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
All right, we're back live. We are back live with Tim Kearns, our co-host here, who couldn't be here tonight for various reasons, but he is alive and well. How you doing, Coach?
I'm good, Rick.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you haven't seen any. You didn't see any games this weekend, but I know you've read the paper. There's some tremendous football games in the area this weekend, and a whole lot coming up. I just have to tell you about one thing about the Gloucester game. I was in the stands with Paul Ingram, and we were reporting on the game. And Gloucester had just cut the lead, 14-12, I believe it was, at the half. 14-7, I think it was, 14-7. With 19 seconds left to go, Gloucester had the ball with about a minute and a half, and they didn't run out the clock. So 19 seconds left to go, and I'm thinking, oh, I don't think they should give it back to Marblehead. And can you believe, I think Marblehead went something like 70 yards in 19 seconds. One was a scramble play where Andy Clough, the Mr. Everything for Marblehead, scrambled. He ran backwards about 30 yards, looked like he was going to be sacked inside his own 20 or 30-yard line, threw it downfield for a 50, 60-yard completion. Kid went out of bounds with no time remaining on the clock. It looked like Gloucester had escaped. You go back to where the quarterback was, and there was a yellow flag right behind him. They signaled Gloucester for roughing the passer. So first and goal from the 5 with no time left, and, of course, you can't end the half on a defensive penalty, so Marblehead punched it in. 19 seconds left to go in the half, and they went something like 70 yards.
Those breakdown plays, those scrambles, you know, more often than not, end up in a play, you know, just as you described, where the quarterback gives ground, and the defense starts to move up, and an offensive player gets behind them, and you know, at 6'7", Clough has great field vision. You can see down the field. Obviously spotted the receiver, and you know, the one thing you fear happening does come true. And then, you know, the roughing the passer. Oh, God, you know, how many times have we seen something like that happen as well? And, again, you can't give good teams the extra plays that give them that one opportunity, because more often than not, bad things going to happen to good teams, you know, by teams that are even just a little bit better right now. And Marblehead, you know, is the better team, and they make Gloucester pay for a miscue.
Well, I want to get back to Marblehead and Danvers in a minute, but you point out yesterday watching the Patriots, I thought the Patriots defense looked pretty good. At least they started to win a lot of plays, and then the quarterback did exactly what Clough did. He scrambled, made something out of nothing with these broken plays. You can't cover these guys forever. And they ended up with some big yardage. But on the initial 5-6 seconds on defense on each play, I thought the Patriots' defense looked pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, they were making a lot more plays. You know, still giving up, still playing too soft of a zone, you know, for my liking. And you know, you made a journeyman quarterback look like a perennial all-star, because he dinked and ducked his way down the field. He threw for 350 yards. They were averaging 149 yards passing so far in the season. And all of a sudden, he goes for 350. And he just can't keep doing that to rinky-dink quarterbacks, making them look that good and making the games this close.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Rinky-dink, wait a minute. Cam Stewart has taken off since the Patriots game. What about Deshaun Watson in Houston? He's been tremendous since the Patriots game. Alex Smith has been tremendous. So they talk about, you know, okay, McCown wasn't a world beater, but these other guys have all thrown against everybody else, too, and racked up, you know, 50 points a game.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, they're very talented quarterbacks who you sort of have to, you know, respect their abilities to run. So your linebackers have to check up a little bit. They can't get as deep as you want. You throw them over them, and they're good, you know. So, but still too many easy throws underneath. You know, I kept commenting yesterday as we were watching the game. The linebackers take so long to recognize the play is coming in their direction before they close in and prevent more yards after the catch. That's got to improve. But the pass rush was better. You know, they made plays when they seemingly had to have a stop. They made a stop, and that's encouraging.
Well, Butler did it again.
Yeah, he can find himself, you know, on the fast lane out of here. You know, for a very good play, he makes a couple of whiffs. And that's not how he was a couple of years ago. And just kind of tough to figure out his game right now.
Mm. Okay, well, back to high school for a minute. The Marblehead Danvers game, coach, is coming up on Friday night, and Danvers playing so well. They had a tremendous game against Beverly. The Panthers played so good and lost in the last 12 or 19 seconds, I believe it was, on a field goal. And Danvers just missing against Classical the week before. Marblehead, Coach Rudloff, not all that happy with the way the offense went on Friday night, but he gave credit, of course, to Gloucester's defense. So this is a championship game for the Tier 1 in the Northeastern Conference with Danvers at Marblehead on Friday night.
Well, that's certainly going to be a war. Danvers has to feel a bit better about themselves. And with that field goal, 38 yards, you know, Zach Dillon kicking that field goal, that's just another element of the game that Marblehead now has to contend with in a close game. Danvers knows they've got a kicker. They know that they've got someone who's not going to wilt under pressure and who can make a field goal of distance. 38 yards is a good kick. Certainly in high school, you don't see many kids kicking them that far. But that's another thing that the Marblehead kids are going to have to contend with. Coach Ruddles and the staff are going to have to practice against, and that takes time away from other areas of preparation that you have. So, you know, Marblehead riding the hard hand, undefeated still, survived a tough game against Gloucester, and they know they're always in for a war against Gloucester. And Davis is going to be no different. Davis is going to bring it. Again, we've often talked numerous times during the season, this is the game of the season. This has been the game of the season. Well, this is on Friday night, game of the season, at least in Tier 1, between, you know, Marblehead undefeated, Davis won or lost. I don't think Davis has lost count of, did it? Is Classical in Tier 1 or Tier 2?
Hold on, let me look at this thing here. Classical is Tier 2.
Okay, so that didn't count against Danvers.
No, they're unbeaten in Tier 1.
Oh, yeah, so, I mean, this just oozes, you know, this is playoff football.
Well,
this is what this is going to be.
Just talked to Jim Pugh, and he said he loves it because the interest has been so high. And I got to tell you, the crowds at Marblehead the last 2 weeks were like Thanksgiving Day crowds, Tim. There were millions of people there. I exaggerate, but there were a lot of people there.
Well, certainly, and you're going to see that again on Friday night because Danvers will travel well,
especially
with the team playing for the championship. And, you know, they draw really well at home, so you know it's not a far trip to Marblehead for those people, just across a couple of towns. So there's going to be some traffic jams down along Humphrey Street Friday evening. So if you're going to get there early.
Well, wait, let's remember haunted happenings, too, in Lafayette Square and, you know, by the Hawthorne Hotel.
If you're coming from Danvers, you might want to find an alternative way other than going through downtown.
The ferry. Take the ferry.
Yeah.
Jeez, I'll tell you. Okay, Coach, listen, I got to ask you a question. Did sports talk radio get John Farrell fired?
Oh, wow. You know, it was interesting when Dave Dombrowski was making his announcement. He said that this change is going to happen no matter how far they went. And I thought to myself, so if he managed to win a series or the AL title, the American League title, and go to the World Series, would he still fire Farrell at the end of it if that was his plan all along? I don't think talk radio did. You know, what Farrell did was out there for all to see and for all to criticize. The talk radio was just a vehicle by which people could vent their frustration. But people were venting their frustration amongst themselves. And Vince is aware of all that bar talk that goes on, and the discussions within the organization itself. How pleased are they? You know, the way that certain incidences were handled this year that didn't go over well publicly with fans, and then, you know, as the because fans are dollar signs to the organizational front office.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to keep those fans happy.
That's funny, because I think you hit the nail on the head with when you mentioned bar talk and dollar signs, because I put Dick Williams into this age, and Dick Williams wouldn't have lasted a year.
There'd have been more black eyes on players than you could count.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
he didn't have time to suffer fools like some and attitudes like these players.
No, and it's a different era, and every single play, every single pitch is scrutinized. And I was talking to Paul Ingram about this the other day. You know, to me, social media, sports radio, and all that other stuff has exacerbated the chasm between the sports fan and the athlete. We were just talking to Gary Larrabee about Josh Sala, how good a golfer he is. And I believe Paul told me he set the course record over at Cape Ann, Bass Rocks the other day, just on a visit home for a short visit. And I think he shot a 61. And yet, here he is, struggling to get into the PGA, and he's such an elite golfer. So when these people talk about, I listened to one of the guys talking about, he sucks, do they understand who they're talking about, Tim?
Well, no, because, you know, when people are just, you know, opinionizing, and it's their passion for the team and the sports, and it's not based on a whole lot of knowledge of probably the sport and of the player themselves, of the amount of talent that the individual has, the amount of work, the amount of pressure that these guys are on to perform. And, you know, I listen to some people make comments and I cringe, you know, about the things they say based upon what? Mm-hmm. You know, what are you basing that on? Your opinion makes no sense other than just being an opinion.
Yep.
That's all it is.
Well, it's
driven by the passion. And one thing we know about people around here is they're passionate.
Well, one thing that's different, and I just realized this, Tim, when we were younger, and certainly when I was a kid, everything I knew about sports, I read about. And there was a time when newspapers, when the Sporting News, Sports Illustrated, Sport Magazine, all the local newspapers, and the Globe, and the Herald, and the Record American, they had sports writers who could talk to the individual player. There weren't press conferences where one player talked to everybody. It was how you could get a hold of someone and get the inside story, get the personal story of these guys. And when you read about these, at least when I read about these as a kid and as a sports fan and as an athlete, I got to know these guys, and you realize, damn, you know, they're human beings, they've got troubles, they've got problems, they work hard. Of course, they weren't making the money they're making now. But it was a different way of looking at sports. I think the sports fan, the true sports fan, was more educated than he is today.
Well, certainly, you know, way back when teams weren't traveling on charters and private planes like they do now, they took the trains. And all the writers traveled with the teams. And they ate with them in the cars. They drank with them. They smoked. They played cards with them. So the beat writers really were ingrained in the teams, and they got to know these guys on that personal level. So a lot of these guys privatized, remained private. But you got to know the players, mm-hmm. because the writers knew the players. And you don't have that today now, because it's a pool of reporters that go in, they talk to a few people, and then after games, there's a couple of guys that come out. Nowadays, the guys run into the shower so they don't have to
mm-hmm.
talk to the reporters to avoid them, so they can get out of there without having to face confrontational questions.
Yeah, it's disappointing to me that you can't learn more about these guys. And of course, you know, nobody's better at controlling the media, you know, than the New England Patriots. And I don't begrudge them that. I mean, you know, they're entitled to their workstation, and they're entitled to their privacy. But it's just that as a sports fan, I have to listen to the uneducated, and when they diss all these athletes, it bothers me. And you know what, Tim? It's part of the lack of civility in this country. I'm gonna come out and say that. You know, when people start just making they dump all over an athlete just because they can, and just because the athlete happens to be making a lot of money and maybe not performing the way the fan wants, you know, they trash the guy, and it's just a matter of it's more than disrespect. It's just being uncivil.
Well, one of the things is Rick, and Medium is agreeing with what you're saying there. She's over to my right, nodding her head. Is the fact that these guys make so much money because, you know, in years back, athletes had to have a second job in the off season
mm-hmm.
in order to, you know, make ends meet. They were making, you know, even though they were making good money, $40,000-$50,000. You know, I remember Rico drove an oil truck. You know. Yaz had a car dealership after the 67 season. But all these guys had second jobs. These guys with their first contracts don't need to work another day in the rest of their lives. And they don't play through injuries. The slightest nick and they're out of the lineup. You know, they seem to have an excuse for everything. It's somebody else's fault. And I think people are tired of these guys who don't take responsibility for their own actions. And that's where I think the short temper of the people comes into play. If these guys were more accountable for themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, a la David Price, well, I stunk today, say it. And instead of, well, you know, the weather was bad and the umpire and the hitters, you know, no, you didn't have it, just say it. People would go, okay, I can deal with that. But people don't want to deal with the lack of accountability on a lot of these ball players.
How'd you like the way Joe Girardi said, okay, I blew it, my fault, I screwed up?
You can live with that,
mm-hmm.
but you can't live with all the namby-pamby soft stuff. He's going to hang now, can't play today. You know, when you think back to other guys, you know, who in pitches, oh, you can't go beyond the fourth inning. You can't throw over 100 pitches. You know, God, and they wonder why they break down.
Okay.
They're not designed for the long run. They're all short-term players. And you know, growing up, we never saw guys break down the way that they break down now. And everybody will say, well, they're bigger, they're better, they're faster, they're stronger. Well, they're not as good because they can't stay in the lineup.
Well, that's a good point. So maybe they're onto something when they trash all these guys. You brought up a lot of good points, Tim.
You know, for them, it's their criticism because, you know, they're paying an awful lot of money.
That's right.
To see these guys play, and
that's
then
true.
They go to the games and, well, he's not in today. Well, why not? Well, he doesn't hit well against left-handers. Mm. Oh.
Okay.
Oh, he only hits against right-handers. Huh? So now I got to plan my schedule of going to a game against finding out who's going to be pitching on that day to see if the guy that I want to see play, if he's going to play that day.
All right, Coach, we got to get going. I don't know where we're going to be Friday night. We'll have to figure this out, but we got some big games coming up on Friday, and I believe the whole staff is available, aren't we?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good, okay. All right, Coach, I appreciate it. Thanks for the talk, and I'll talk to you later on.
Okay, Rick, thank you. Good night.
Thanks, Tim. Take care. That's Tim Kearns, our sports analyst on MSO, and very knowledgeable, very articulate, and a blast to listen to when you listen to these games that he and Bill broadcast or he and Marty broadcast. Okay, one more score. Hamilton-Wenham girls soccer, Newburyport 2, Hamilton-Wenham 0, or love, I should say, or nil. It's nil, right? 2-0. As despite a strong effort by the Generals' defense, junior Shea Granice and Megan Peterson and sophomores Maddie Rivers and Belle Dolan, Newburyport scored the only goals of the afternoon. Addie Condon contributed 7 saves. The Generals are now 3-8-3. They play Wednesday night in Amesbury, according to Coach Nancy Waddell. And Coach, thank you for for sending that in to us. So other scores in volleyball, Hamilton won them 3, North Reading 0, and Ipswich 3, Newburyport 0, I believe, as well. And in boys soccer, it was St. Mary's 4, Archbishop Williams 3. That's it from here for Tim Kearns, Bill Newell, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.